Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 94 is being brought to you once again by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. Where are we at today?
We are in beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia.
Lawrenceville, Georgia.
I wish we were somewhere else, but we're not.
It was beautiful yesterday, beautiful today. 55 degree high yesterday, clear skies. I shared with you earlier before we started recording that I went for a nice run yesterday. Didn't do quite as well as I wanted to, but it sure was nice being outside. So we're recording this podcast on Championship Sunday.
I don't know what that means.
NFL Conference Championship Sunday.
Mm.
Do you know who's playing?
Titans, Ravens? I have no idea.
That's close. You're kind of like the guy at Starbucks today. There's this real happy guy that is at the Starbucks I normally get a coffee at, and I pulled up and got my coffee today, and he's like, "Hey, how's it going, Brad?" "It's going great." I'm like, "You going to watch the games today?" He looked at me. I'm like, "Are you an NFL fan?" "Oh, yeah. Who's playing?" And I said, "Oh, you're not a fan." And we just moved on. So Kansas City Chiefs are playing...
I don't know. The 49ers.
Green Bay Packers are playing. No, they're not playing each other.
I don't know.
Anyway, I don't have any predictions. I don't know who's going to win.
Can you please tell me so that I can
Bills are playing the Kansas City Chiefs in the early game. And then Green Bay Packers are playing Tom Brady and Tampa Bay.
Oh, he doesn't play for the Patriots anymore?
Nope.
Oh. No.
This is going to be, I think, his 14th.
Is he like 50 years old and still playing in the NFL?
No, he's like, I think he's 43 or 44.
Okay, so that's basically 50.
Pretty old, and I think this is his 14th championship game, I heard. Conference championship game, I think. Could be total championship, but I heard the next closest to him was like 7 conference champion games, and that was Joe Montana. Who he was top dog. He was
Tom Brady's the oldest person apparently
the
to
goat.
Ever play.
Back in the day, he was the goat.
Oh, that's funny. What's a goat?
You tell me. You
greatest of all time.
Yeah. Or scapegoat.
Oh, well, it could be a scapegoat.
So
anyway, so you're right. Tom Brady is 43 years old, and he is the oldest QB in the NFL.
Yeah. So he. The amazing thing is everybody thought he and Bill Belichick with the Patriots, that was kind of the dream team, and they were very codependent on each other, and they always gave Belichick a lot of the credit. Well, Tom has since left there, playing at Tampa, and has taken them back to a championship game for the first time in a long time.
Oh, wow. Real quick, though, I know this is a veterinary podcast and not a sports podcast, so sorry, everybody, but Drew Brees, he plays for the Green Bay Packers. Is that right?
That's incorrect.
Okay, so did he used to?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, so does he play for a team that's in the championship?
No, they got beat by Tampa last week.
Okay, so who does he play for?
The Saints.
Okay. Well, he, I believe, is the second oldest person at 42 years old.
Yeah, and he's expected to retire. And I've been listening to a lot of sports radio this weekend. The sports casters are just amazed that Brady is like playing like a 32-year-old.
So interesting, right? So we always talk about like dog names and cat names and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I do feel like we have seen quite a few Bradys over the years and children's names as well that are named Brady after Tom Brady.
Yeah, for sure.
We may have one of those in our family. I don't know. It's kind of like a...
What do you mean you don't know? You may have...
Like if it was named after him or not kind of thing. But anyways, I find it interesting that we just don't see that many Toms. We've talked about human names for pets before.
Yeah.
But like, we don't see Tom like at all.
Tomcat.
Tom is kind of like a name that has...
You would think Tom and Jerry, you remember that cartoon?
I do.
You would think there would be Toms. We see Pete's.
Who was Tom, the mouse or the cat?
Tom was the cat. Tomcat.
Who was Jerry, the mouse or the cat?
The mouse. So anyway, back to the sports casting comment. So this morning on my way into the clinic, I'm listening to ESPN, and all of a sudden, an ad comes on ESPN radio for veterinarians. And they are recruiting veterinarians to come work for vetpartners.com/jobs is where you go. Please don't go there if you're a vet looking to for a job.
But, no, mygavet.com if you're looking to be a veterinarian in Georgia,
anyway,
in Metro
Atlanta
area.
They're recruiting over ESPN radio for veterinarians. Come work with us. You don't have to worry about all the headache of owning a practice. You can do what you love. You can treat dogs and cats, and you know,
so
let us take all.
So that's actually beyond super interesting because the graduating class is mostly female.
Yep.
So do you think that they're like targeting the male husbands of these female veterinarians that are like struggling? Like, because
maybe.
The percentage of males in a graduating class is like less than one these days.
I don't know if it's let what no what.
Like the of the whole population, it's like, it's basically like less than 1%.
Male versus female.
Yeah.
Graduating vets.
What do you think?
Well, I don't think it's quite that low.
Okay. So maybe I over-exaggerated a little bit.
I think
but
it could be as high as 70-30.
You think? Mm-hmm. I would think like 90-10.
No, I will have to check facts, but I don't think that's correct.
So I would think most men are going to go into large animal if you kind of look across like the Texas A&Ms, like those other vet schools out west.
Texas Tech, their new vet school is supposed to open, I think, this fall up around Canyon, Texas. So.
I just think it's crazy that, to your point, that they are not that women can't like sports. So I'm not, don't get me on this whole feminism thing. Their target demographic is kind of weird.
Yeah.
So not to get so weird. So you were listening on ESPN, like on the actual like XM radio.
Via Sirius radio.
So not on your like phone.
No, just in my vehicle.
Okay.
And
because I was gonna say like
no
they may be targeting the ads towards you specifically because like I play on my iPhone. I play a game called Game Pigeon. I don't know if you're a familiar, but
not
basically
aware.
It's through your text messaging app. And while you're waiting on your opponent to take their turn, I'm getting all of these ads that are very veterinary specific as well about like finding a new job or
cookies,
all that kind of thing. So I find that super interesting.
But
because Lance plays with me, right? And his ads are targeted towards more things that he would like. So it's super interesting how they do that.
Yeah. So, you know, this is just a consolidator buying group, you know, that I think they have 60 something clinics. I just find it super interesting that this is their means of advertising. And obviously it caught my attention in my ear and we're talking about it and hopefully not promoting them, but just a changing world that we live in. So
along the sports line, can we talk about the Mark Cuban?
Yes.
Okay. Cause that kind of fits, right?
So most people know Mark Cuban. He is on Shark Tank. And he is the owner of the Dallas Mavericks. And he is a billionaire.
He is a very wealthy man. And so he can basically do, I'm assuming, whatever the heck he wants to do. But I found it interesting that I was actually reading, I believe it's entrepreneur.com, I get their email subscriptions. And so basically it's Mark Cuban. He started a drug company called Cost Plus Drug Company.
Okay.
And basically he is touting this radically transparent, low-cost versions of high-cost generic drugs.
Say that one more time.
Low-cost versions of high-cost generic drugs.
Low-cost versions of high-cost generic. So we all know name-brand drugs, when they first come out, and the patent's still in place, they are oftentimes quite expensive. You're paying for the research and development, the marketing, everything else that goes along with the manufacturing of these drugs. And then once they, I guess, come off patent and go generic, the cost is significantly less, typically.
Typically.
And then there's a generic to the generic and a third and a fourth and a fifth. And then all of a sudden everybody has the generic. And then we also often hear of people getting their meds from Canada because they're so much cheaper from pharmacies in Canada, which I've always been a little bit skeptical about that for some reason. It's almost like getting meds from a pharmacy in Mexico. I'm not really sure, you know, what safeguards are in place. But he's trying to, I guess, the low-cost, high-volume method, whether it's veterinary medicine or generic drugs, he's trying to come in and produce, he's going to manufacture these drugs. Is that correct?
So that I'm not 100% sure of. So the company was actually started up by a doctor. I'm going to butcher his name, but Oshmanansky.
Okay.
And basically, he started it back in 2018. I guess somehow Mark Cuban kind of got wind of it and basically sent him a cold email, basically like, hey, I'll put my name on this company. Apparently, Oshmanansky has been doing some really great things with it, but obviously with the backing and the name of Mark Cuban, it's going to go a lot further, faster, I would think.
Did this come through Shark Tank, or was it a completely separate?
I think it was completely separate. There's the first drug that they're going to, which I thought was super, super interesting and why I wanted to talk about this. So the first drug being produced by the company is a generic treatment for hookworm called albendazole, lowering the cost from $225 per pill to an average of about $20 per pill.
So I didn't read, you sent me this story, and I didn't read this deep into that. I'm remembering hookworm in people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's albendazole, which is actually a large animal dewormer. We used to use valbenazine, which I think, I don't know if it was valbendazole or albendazole. I think valbenazine was a liquid form of albendazole that we would use in our sheep. And so I remember we would buy it was like 1.7 liter jug, and yeah, maybe it's $100. But in people, you're saying it's $200?
$225 for, I'm assuming, the generic albendazole, right? Not even the brand name of whoever manufactures it. But what he's doing is he's going to lower this. And this, like, when I first read through this, I thought, oh, you know, like, how great that they're going to try to, you know, treat hookworms in these third world countries. This is in America.
Oh, wow.
These are physicians that cannot affordably treat hookworm outbreaks throughout America because it's been so expensive. I know, right?
Huh.
Isn't that crazy? So hookworm is a zoonotic disease, right? We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. Basically, like, pets and large animals, obviously, they have, they carry hookworms. They can. And help me out here because I'm totally off my train of thought. But
well, they're not.
They can basically be transmitted to humans through fecal-oral contact or transdermal.
Yes. Is this what we're talking about? We're talking about these larval migraines and things? Versus, is there a human hookworm, which is where I thought you were going with this? Do humans get hookworms? Maybe we need to research this while we're...
Humans are getting hookworms, I'm pretty certain.
But is it for
not
pets?
The...
Because it's...
it's not for
the
pets,
visceral,
it's for
larval
humans.
Migraine. Well, I would not have thought that would be that big of a problem. I kind of thought we were talking more about a species-specific, not a zoonotic disease. So while I'm talking and while we're talking, we'll kind of continue to dive into this and try to figure this out.
Okay, so CDC.gov. Are hookworms common in the United States? An estimated 576 to 740 million people in the world are infected with hookworm. Hookworm was once widespread in the United States, particularly in the southeastern region.
Because of the climate.
But improvements in living conditions have greatly reduced hookworm infections.
Huh. So we still don't know if this is like U.S. worldwide, is it... human hookworm, or is it zoonotic hookworm? I think it's got to be human hookworm.
I'm 100% sure it's human hookworm is what they're talking about.
But what you're talking about, the zoonotic hookworm from pets to people, I would think would present a little differently. I would think hookworm infection in most people, if it's the human species, would cause GI problems like it does in pets.
So again on the CDC, so reading through that estimated 576 to 740, which there's a big gap there, by the way. Hookworm or Ascaris and whipworm are known as soil transmitted helminths.
Helminths, yep.
Together they account for a major burden of disease worldwide. Dun da da da.
So whips and hooks, they're talking about in people.
If the infected person defecates outside near bushes in a garden or field, or if the feces of an infected person are used as fertilizer, eggs are then transmitted into the soil.
Same way with pets.
Right. So the larvae mature into a form that can penetrate the skin of humans.
Yep.
Hookworm infection is mainly acquired by walking barefoot on contaminated soil, which is why my mother always told me to wear shoes outside.
Uh-huh.
One kind of hookworm can also be transmitted through the ingestion of larvae. So okay. The CDC website does not go down into
that's interesting. You learn something new every day. So I would have thought if it's the people hookworm that, like with pets, they would primarily get infested or infected by ingesting the infective stage larva, which mm-hmm. this talks about, but that's the minor route of them getting exposed. It's through the skin penetration, which is exactly how humans get dog or cat hookworm.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. So on the CDC website, there's these two images. And so the left image is phalariform, which is a hookworm larva. And then the right image is rhabdiform. Does that sound familiar?
Rhabdiform.
R-H-A-B-D-I-T-I-F-O-R-M.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
the phalariform, I mean, that's, you know, microfilaria. That's a worm shape.
It doesn't really identify a species, right? So if it's like more animal species, or if there truly is like a human hookworm species, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's so I would have thought that Cuban would have, you know, come out with blood pressure medication or, you know.
So they will, I think, but apparently this is like the first.
Maybe the sourcing mm-hmm. of the raw product and yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's super cool.
So one other thing real quick. So sorry, again on the CDC website. So it says the two main species of hookworm infecting humans are Ancelostoma and...
So Ancelostoma caninum is our dog.
Well, this is Ancelostoma duodenale.
Duodenale, so it must attach in the duodenum.
And then Necator americanus.
Have not heard of that.
So, that's according to the...
But Ancelostoma, that is what we see. Caninum, and I think Brazilianses is the...
dog and cat.
Is the cat.
Yeah.
So
anyway, interesting stuff. I think that they will come out with, like, blood pressure medications, more so diabetic medications, because Dr. Oshimansky is a diabetic himself.
Okay.
And so, essentially, life-saving drugs is, I think, obviously what they're going after here.
So, there's definitely a need for lower-cost medications, I'm certain, you know, human and animal species as well. Hopefully he's using his wealth and his knowledge and know-how to improve the world, right? He's not looking to make a killing. He's not going to make a ton of money, at least on per unit. He probably will make a ton of money based on the volume, but good for him.
Yeah, so just reading a little further into that article. So Mark Cuban was actually on another podcast called The Verge Decoder podcast in November, where he talked about this and about how he tries to stay out of the public light for the most part.
He does, yeah.
But he's quoted on that podcast that says there's still hookworm epidemics in Alabama and Texas and other places.
Huh.
So interesting, right?
So yeah, that's kind of... one of his causes, it sounds like. Yeah. Kind of like Merck Animal Health, one of their causes is trying to eradicate rabies worldwide.
Yes.
It's not a huge problem in the U.S. that I'm aware of, but it is a huge problem in third world countries.
Yeah, how crazy, right?
So that is super interesting. We'll maybe reach out to Mark and see if he wants to come on our podcast.
And talk about some albendazole.
Yeah, so super cool. Real quick, we talked about zoonotic diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So... hookworm, roundworm, ringworm, which is not a worm. Mm-hmm. It's a fungus, fungal infection. What are some other zoonotic diseases?
Whipworms, technically.
You know, that's what the CDC said. I'm not I'm not aware.
Maybe it's
of
a different
that.
Species.
I think it's probably different.
Tapeworm. Did you already say that one?
Well,
it's a different species as well,
yeah,
but human can get
not
tapeworm.
What we typically see.
So let's talk strictly zoonotic. So leptospirosis.
Lepto, yeah.
Lyme disease can be infected by both humans and, but it's not essentially transparent or one to the other.
It doesn't go back and forth. Strep can actually go both ways.
So
streptococcus,
like MRSA, methicillin resistant. I don't know that I would consider that a zoonotic disease, but it can be passed. So I guess technically it is.
Believe it or not, Bordetella, which is the typical causative agent of kennel cough.
We talked about this.
Talked about it. Yeah, we talked about the canine infectious respiratory disease complex. Bordetella was the original and the most well-known infectious agent, but that can go back and forth. It's rare.
Yeah.
But it can.
And you mentioned it earlier, rabies. That's obviously the most life-threatening of all of them. Yeah.
And I think maybe COVID with mink, possibly.
Maybe.
Is what people are saying.
Yeah. Still not 100% out there, but
so anyway, what else? You know, we've talked like we always do. We're 20 minutes into this and we had nothing to talk about.
Well, I have some things. Well, we talked last time that we were going to talk about AHA and the accreditation, so let's get there in a second. But do you remember, at the end of 2020, we talked about how for the first time in 30 years, like Denver lifted their ban on pit bulls?
Yes.
So, Gumdrop, now named Odin, was the first pit bull to be legally adopted since that was overturned. And apparently he started 2020 as an orphan in the streets of Denver, and in 2021 he was adopted. So,
Gumdrop, now
Odin.
Known as Odin.
Yep.
Formerly known as Gumdrop.
Formerly known as Gumdrop, now his name is Odin, which I think of like Garfield, right? Because wasn't that the dog's name?
We have a dog or two in the practice named Odin.
Yeah.
It's familiar, so.
But I thought that was really cool, and it tied back into some of the things that we've talked about before. I would have thought like instantly there was a dog adopted, but apparently it took a month or two in order for the dog to actually be adopted. So congratulations to Gumdrop.
Yeah.
Being the first pit bull adopted in Denver since the repeal of the 30-year ban.
Let's go back to drugs real quick.
I think it's repeal, not repel.
Repeal, yes.
Okay.
The FDA just conditionally approved it's not really a new drug, but they conditionally approved potassium bromide the treatment of animal idiopathic epilepsy. Epilepsy that we don't really know exactly the cause, but, you know, the body... So I'm going to stop there. Idio, we've talked about, I thought idio meant like you didn't know, but I actually looked it up and it means own, like O-W-N or self. And then pathos means disease, basically. And so, you know, idiosyncratic, idiotic, idiot, idiopathic. I guess I'm just bringing that up because I thought it meant something else.
Gotcha.
But long story short, we have used potassium bromide as a secondary or tertiary treatment to add into our seizure patients' medications. And I guess I did realize that there was not an FDA-approved drug. But the interesting thing, we use a ton of phenobarbital still, and we use Keppra, usually as our secondary. But those are two drugs that are not approved for animals. But we use them off-label. And so this is an old drug that was used in people. It's not really used anymore. We have used it historically in our practices, but we don't really use it anymore. And I just find it a little bit interesting that now they have a conditional license to produce this product, which, in my opinion, would be the fourth drug I would reach for if I had a seizure patient that I couldn't get under control.
So what's interesting is that on the FDA, and again, like I'm not reading through all of it, but it appears that potassium bromide, and it actually lists it in this order. So approved potassium bromide products, phenobarbital and KBR, so potassium bromide, are still considered standard. So it's interesting that the FDA is obviously, they're acknowledging that you can't do this without phenobarbital.
Correct. And again, I don't understand. We can focus and I don't know, it's the fourth drug I would reach for. I would reach for phenobarb if they didn't tolerate or it didn't work, then we would typically go on Keppra, and then sometimes we add in, Lazamide, I think.
Mm-hmm.
KBR, potassium bromide, if nothing else is working. So
I really wonder, so is there a drug company that went to the FDA and said, like, you know, we want to brand this product, and that's why all of this happened? I don't see anything as far as, like, who the FDA, like, gave the conditional license to, but I would imagine that's what happened, that a pharmaceutical company went there and said, like, you know, this is being used.
Yeah.
We'd like to label it and use it.
So I don't think I'm going to invest my monies in that company or its product. So,
funny.
But the other thing,
Pegasus Laboratories, by the way,
the other thing in the news, similar, but somewhat, I mean, different rather, but related, I read yesterday that a lot of the COVID vaccines are being delayed in their delivery because Trump made the FDA change the label on the vaccine. I'm assuming, I don't know if this is Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, but the manufacturers were overfilling the vials, and it was listed as a 4 mL vial, and they were putting about 5 mL in each vial. And some pharmacists would actually pull the extra dose out. Others would not. They would say, nope, I got my 4 mL out. They'd throw the vial in the trash. So he, being Trump, asked the FDA, made the FDA change the label to say that there are 5 doses in here. Go ahead and extract all the doses. So that's good because there's a vaccine shortage as far as delivery and the raw product. So now I think it's like an additional 16% or so of product in those vials that's being delivered, which is going to help vaccinate more people. Hopefully the volume of the vaccine will offset the delay and redoing the labels. But I just thought that was...
That's super interesting. I didn't hear that. I definitely have heard, like, all the, you know, the mumbo jumbo about how the vaccines are short and how President Biden is going to have, you know, his first difficult task at hand about how do we get vaccines out to more people. But it makes sense, to your point, that the vaccines are being held up because of a change. And it's not that Trump did anything wrong here. It sounds like he was trying to do something right, because, I mean, if we have had that before, right? So, like, we have injectables here in the practice that sometimes get overfilled, and especially, like, for controlled substances, it's very difficult because it says it should be 5 mL, but there's actually 5.5 or 6 in the bottle. And what do you do with it? You know, do you say there was an accidental overage, or do you discard it? And so I think they're on this ethical thing, like, if it says I should only have 4, like, how do they keep up with their inventory? How do they keep up with the injections?
Article was also talking about, they were calling it low volume syringes that are more accurate, and it didn't explain more. And I didn't really go looking. I
would imagine, like, a tuberculin syringe versus, which is only like 1 versus like 3.
Maybe I think they were. I think it was talking about the airlock or the void, maybe in the hub or something.
Hub.
So anyway, I moved on to another story after.
No, but that's interesting. I would assume that they were single dose vials instead of multi dose.
Yeah, I would
that's
have
crazy.
As well. But that's just more raw vaccine product that can be administered.
Think about all the doses that were thrown in the trash.
And I wonder if, you know, I'm going to say a lot of the pharmacists are the ones administering this, which that's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
Why are pharmacists allowed to give injections? What training do they have? Maybe they do have training.
Well, I mean, I do think that they're pretty smart individuals.
Well, they are,
but I don't know. I mean, quite frankly, if we're being honest, giving an injection in, like, your muscle in your upper forearm and your upper arm, like, what can go wrong?
Well, you could use too big of a needle. You could hit the bone. That would hurt. There's some things that could go wrong.
That sounds disgusting.
So I wonder if they have 2 vials of vaccine with 0.5 mL left in each one, if they're combining the product.
Or if they're, yeah.
I bet they're not.
I would bet they're not.
I would, but I bet they're not.
Yeah, I would bet they're not either.
So, okay. Any more stories on your end?
Only real quick. So we talk about, we've talked about...
You started talking about AHA. Is that where you're going?
No. I was going to say, like, puppies and kittens. Like, we have still seen a huge mass influx of puppies and kittens.
How many... Rhonda and Jen shared those numbers with us. How many for the year? We just reviewed that within the last week.
It was less than 300, but I want to say somewhere around, like, 245, 250.
I thought it was significant. I thought it was, like, 540.
Oh, maybe, I don't know.
New
We'll have to
dogs
ask
and
them.
new cats, new puppies, new kittens into the practice over the last 11
It would have
months.
been February to end of year, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I thought it was interesting. So I started looking. I ran into this website that
I
says,
think it
you
was
know, like
547, actually.
547. I knew it was 40 something, but to your point, 250 sounds a little low. I was just running through the internet and I ran across this website called Rover.com, which I don't know anything about it, so don't quote me on it. But apparently, they published this article or they make these statements about these 10 puppy essentials that you need right now. And one of their topics were like, if you're going to consider getting a new puppy, you should know the true cost of a puppy in its first year. So in 2019, they estimated that the true cost of a puppy was about $1,400. $1,487.
And what is this including?
I don't know. I would imagine everything because then the list goes down into like, here's these 10 things that you need, you
Okay.
know, and it talks about like a dog crate, pee pads, all this
So a
other stuff. So
leash, food,
I'm assuming veterinary care
veterinary
is in
care.
here. So yeah, I think that number is a little low,
Okay.
quite frankly. But granted, that was 2019. But more so, I started looking and I was like, you know, who even is Rover and why do people like, how do you know like what a reputable source is when you go there? So I started looking a little bit more and AVMA, which we know them as, you know, like a, help me out, not a support group, but like a reference for veterinary.
Refereed, vetted, yeah, I mean, yes, authority. It's
Yes,
our
for
American
our.
Veterinary Medical Association,
Yeah, but
our
we look
parent
at them.
organization.
Yeah, so we look at them for information for us. Well,
Yep.
apparently they actually have a YouTube channel, which I did not know this.
AVMA does?
Yeah, and it's called AVMA TV, and it's all these things that like geared towards pet parents. So like ear care for dogs, ear care for cats, obesity in your pet, CPR for pets, things you need to know before owning a horse, spaying and neutering, the responsible thing to do. Vaccinating your pets. And these are like all videos with veterinarians, and they're obviously talking about all of this stuff. Periodontal disease. Huge, huge, huge library.
Oh, wow.
So, like, all this other information on like random websites. I definitely think, you know, kudos to AVMA, but like, we need to get this information out there
So we need to put a link on our website, I
to their
guess, to
YouTube
their
channel.
YouTube, and
Yeah.
a lot of this stuff we try to do on our own, right? We try to, do these videos and kind of customize them to what we believe and how we do things in the practice. But if the resources are out there from the AVMA,
Yeah.
that's great.
So I was thinking like, you know, if you're a new pet owner and you Google like, uh-oh, my, you know, what do I do with this? How do I know what to get for a dog and all this other things? It's like, who knows who what opinion you're going to find on the internet and how do you know what to find a reputable source from? And that's kind of where I wanted to tie into to AAHA, so the American Animal Hospital Association. So they are also listed as a reference for pet parents and they do have a pet parents section and it more so guides you into like finding an animal hospital with the standards that is an AAHA accredited practice. So let's talk about that real quick. AAHA, so the American Animal Hospital Association, is the only organization that accredits veterinary practices in the United States and in Canada. So there's no other source out there. And I think that, I don't know. I mean, I think we've talked about this before. People just assume that because you're a doctor, that you're the same, your doctor equals this doctor equals that doctor.
And this hospital equals that hospital, and everybody
Yeah.
has the same
And I think,
equipment and yeah, the knowledge and
I think sometimes people think the
standards.
same thing in human medicine, right? Like if I go to hospital A, I should have the same treatment as if I went to hospital B. But there is a little bit of difference, right? Like people do have like preferred hospital systems, and it probably goes back to their standards of care and how they do things. And so I don't know the groups that are out there that standardize that stuff for human medicine. But as I said earlier, AAHA is the only organization that's doing this for veterinary
I
practices.
would think big hospital systems have to be accredited, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, by
But yeah,
who?
I totally agree. I mean, you can have a single practitioner operating, I'm going to say, out of his house, right? Family practice, which those are few and far between. You have urgent cares these days. You do have hospital systems. I think we do know, like, the Mayo Clinic, that is, right, the gold standard. If you've really got something that nobody can figure out, you probably should try to go there.
Right.
And we somewhat have that, but we're talking about basic care, you know, basic diseases. Yeah, AHA is the only governing body that accredits us for sure. And so we will be talking a little bit more in the coming weeks because we are up for reaccreditation at all of our hospitals.
Yep. So I was going to say all four of our practices are that way. And so in order to be AHA accredited, it's not a mandated organization.
Right.
It's not a mandated thing. Like, you don't have to be a veterinary. You don't have to be AHA accredited to have a veterinary practice. And so it's voluntary. And still today, only 12 to 15% of veterinary practices in the United States and Canada have the AHA accreditation designation assigned to them. So anyways, it is basically up to 900 standards that we ourselves hold ourselves to the higher standard. So as you said, we'll talk about it a little bit more there. It goes through things of like how we obviously care for pets, how we care for the clients, what our hospital organization is like, how we organize our medical records to like the
standards.
Drugs and protocols that we use on the patient.
Standards of care, training, CE, it's all inclusive. So, but yeah, that'll be some good topics for the upcoming cast. All right. We are going long. So,
all right.
Let's get out of here. All right, who's playing again today? What are your predictions?
Chiefs all the way.
Chiefs over the Bills. Okay. I'm going to say the Chiefs are going to win by one. And then the Packers and the Buccaneers.
Oh, Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay, yeah.
It doesn't fit to me. Like, the Tampa Bay should be like something more, not like a Buccaneer.
Because they're on a bay and pirate ships.
I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to say Tampa's going to do it because it's Tom Brady. I mean, why would you vote against him?
I'm going to take the Packers winning by 7.
So you're going to say Tom Brady's not going to go to the Super Bowl?
Is that what you
just said?
I'm about 50-50, honestly.
I think Brady's going.
Two of these games are going to be excellent games. I don't think there's going to be a blowout. I also thought the New Orleans Saints were going to really hand it to Tampa Bay last week, and that did not happen. So that is why I am a veterinarian and not a...
I was just thinking that we should change the name of our podcast to Sports, Weather, and Pets.
There you go.
Instead of
People, Pets, and Vets. Sports, and the weather.
Sports, Weather, and Pets. That's what you get here on People, Pets, and Vets.
Let's get out of here.
All right, guys, check in next week as we discuss more in the news, in the sports, in the weather, and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Make sure to follow all of our practices on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com, which if you are a veterinarian and you are looking for a job, there is also a forms tab and a resource where you can apply for a new job.
Yes, absolutely.
And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.